Hello and welcome to MPN Forum Live, the home to MPN patient storytelling, the only podcast specifically designed for patients and caregivers of MPNs, which include the following blood cancers: PV, ET, and myelofibrosis. From the dawn of time, human beings have shared a deep history of bonding with each other through storytelling. These stories provide MPN patients and their families with a unique experience not easily replicated on traditional social platforms. Besides patient stories, from time to time we will feature guest hosts, caregivers, hematologists, and experts who can provide insight into medical breakthroughs and the benefits of exercise and a well-balanced diet. We are funded through donations from our listeners and grants from CTI Biopharma and Insight. MPN Forum is completely independent from outside influence and is reliant on donations from our listeners. Anyone interested in making a much appreciated donation can go out to our website, mpnforumlive.com. Please click on the donation tab and you can donate via check or PayPal. All views and comments presented on MPN Forum Live are the opinions of our guests and hosts and are not to be taken as professional medical advice. Always check with your hematologist or oncologist should you be interested in learning more about a topic discussed on MPN Forum Live. On today's episode, we will be talking with Jeremy Moberly about what it's like being a younger MPN patient. He was diagnosed with polycythemia vera in 2018. Jeremy, welcome to MPN Forum Live, and thank you for being our very first guest.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Really appreciate it, Jeremy.
Oh, you're very welcome. So, according to our pre-notes, you live in, is it West Carrollton, Ohio?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Have you always lived there, or is that?
No, I spent in early 2011, I moved to Sacramento, California, where I lived for about 6 or 7 years. And then when my father got ill, I moved back to West Carrollton to help take care of him. So
nice. So married, family, any of that stuff?
No marriage, no kids, just a 39-year-old bachelor with thick blood.
Yeah, I was diagnosed when I was 30. I was a single parent, actually. I had just gone through a divorce. So,
oh, wow.
My kids were – my oldest, my son was 5, and my two daughters were 3 and 1.5. So it was quite a shock. Let's start off, you know, how did you – did you have any early warning signs before you were diagnosed that something wasn't right?
Looking back now, I do. I actually found out by accident. I was visiting my mom and I stood up and I felt like maybe I stood up too fast and I got a little dizzy. Well, I ended up passing out. So ambulance came, took me to the hospital, did some blood work, and that's how I found out. So I actually kind of found out by accident. And looking back now, you know, thinking about the fatigue, being filled up quickly when eating, the blurry vision, those kind of things. Looking back, I probably had it for a lot longer than what I realized.
Right, right. Yeah, when I first had it, I don't know if you had this issue at all, but people started pointing out to me that I looked like I had been in the sun a lot more recently, that people noticed that my face was a little bit redder than normal. And I don't know if you noticed anything like that with yourself.
No, I did notice taking hot showers seemed to be a real pain. You know, my skin would get super itchy. So my mom and dad, even when I was young, always wondered why I kept going through so much cream. And it's because, well, every time after I got out of the shower, my entire body felt like I had scabies all over it, you know?
Wow. Yeah. So we went to the hospital. Very similar stories, you and I, because I was driving my car. I had noticed something was up. I wasn't feeling right. And all of a sudden, I couldn't breathe. And I pulled over. Luckily, we had cell phones back in 1989. And an ambulance came.
Big cell phones.
What?
big cell phones.
Yes. Yes. I had the big one in the car. So, they picked me up, took me to the hospital, and, the doctors ran blood tests and they knew something was up. They didn't want me to leave, but my local doctor said, no, don't worry about it. I'll see him in the morning. So how did they, was it a CBC or did you eventually find a specialist and get a bone marrow biopsy?
It was a CBC at first, and then they referred me to a specialist in Dayton, and that's when they did the bone marrow biopsy, and that's when they confirmed that it was a polycythemia vera.
Right, and then once you knew, was it shocking? How did you feel once you were told about the diagnosis? I'm always curious about that.
Yeah, when the doctor at the ER was talking about it, he really didn't put a lot of emphasis that it was a serious thing. And it wasn't until I got home and started doing some Googling and, you know, I typed in polycythemia vera and you see the word cancer, and that's a shocker. That's kind of brings you down a notch, you know, really quick. And it's difficult too, because you tell people what this is and they go, well, you look okay. You look fine. You don't look like you have cancer, you know, and that's been kind of difficult to deal with as well, especially with employment, you know, because I go in and I'm, you know, joking around and laughing and I appear to be okay, but, you know, I don't really feel the best most days, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes it's one of those, it's a disease where you don't necessarily want a lot of sympathy, but at the same time,
right.
You don't often get taken seriously because
sure.
People look at you and they say, you look like a pillar of health. What are you talking
sure.
about? How could you possibly have cancer?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And I've even coworkers seeing how I eat, you know, I've changed my diet. I, you know, avoid the red meat as much as I can. You know, I don't eat fast food. I don't drink soda. I don't drink alcohol. So they see me, you know, eating apples and oranges and, you know, things that are better for you. And they can't seem to wrap their heads around why Jeremy just doesn't feel good today. You know, why is his attitude just a little off today? Well, it's because I don't feel all that great.
You know? Right. Were you prescribed any medications?
Not yet. No. For now we're sticking with the aspirin, and I go for a phlebotomy about once every month and a half.
Right. Now. Right. So, yeah, you know, one of the challenges, and, you know, I'll ask you this question. How do you educate yourself so that you feel like you have enough knowledge without trying to become a doctor and diagnose yourself?
There are a few MPN groups out there that offer a lot of really good information. Watching those videos, there are a few doctors on Twitter that I reach out to that kind of help me navigate as new opportunities to help you feel better come along. They're pretty good about kind of directing you towards what's going to help you feel better, you know?
Right, right, right. So have you looked at any of the newer drugs, you know, like interferon? Have you had discussions about that? I know there's hydroxyurea, there's Jakafi.
Right.
How far have you investigated any of the alternative treatments?
I've read about them, but my doctor now seems to think that we can keep my numbers under relative control just with the aspirin, phlebotomy, and a healthier diet. Mine specifically, he feels like some of the side effects from Jakafi, interferon might just make me end up feeling worse given my age. He thinks that's something we can put off for a while. And you know, you have to be honest with your doctor. You have to tell him how you're feeling. And even though I don't feel 100%, I feel like if I can keep myself feeling, you know, 70-80%, hopefully I can avoid taking that medication right now.
Yeah, I'm 33 years into this, so I was.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I'll be 63 next month. So I wish I had jumped on interferon earlier because my
really?
Yeah, my polycythemia went from I just is over, you know, over a long period of time, all human beings have issues within their bodies. You get more fibrosis. And one of the things that I didn't understand early on back in the 80s and 90s was that, you know, the thing you have to worry about is how fast your fibrosis moves through your body. And in a lot of times it's really slow.
Right.
And so, cause you want to try and avoid at all costs, converting to myelofibrosis. And so, we stayed on Hydrea for many years. I saw other specialists who wanted me to go on interferon cause it's really the only drug that has been shown in some cases to slow the progression of the disease, especially the newest data for patients that have polycythemia. And a lot of the reservations of why I didn't go on it was exactly what your doctor's saying, is because my doctor was telling me kind of the same thing. The side effects from the drugs can be this or that. It turned out I really didn't get any side effects when I went on interferon, but I had already converted to myelofibrosis. So it slowed down my myelofibrosis, but you know, I wish I still had PV versus myelofibrosis because there's other complications. So, you know, it's one of those things that it's a difficult decision. And the more people you ask, the more opinions you get.
Right.
Over the long haul, because you're a young guy, which is very different than if I was 63 and got polycythemia, then, you know, the prognosis would probably be, hey, we'll just put them on a Hydrea and you'll probably live into your 80s or 90s and everything would be fine. But when you're younger, you know, it's a much greater lifespan. Fortunately, you don't have to do anything today. And, you know, you do have the opportunity to explore other options, and there's other drugs coming out and other options, but you want to stay on top of that, which is really important. So in your personal life, you're one of the only persons that I know that, because of your age, that's, you're not married. So you're out there, you're single. Have you dealt with that yet? Any interesting stories with dating and do you just not say anything? What would
I do tend to bring it up later on. I was dating someone just a few years ago, and things were going well, and she actually had a mother that was dealing with breast cancer at the time, and somehow me bringing up my what she called a non-cancer, when I brought that up, That led to a fight, and that led up to us eventually breaking up because, you know, it's not a serious cancer. And that got me thinking too. Not that I wish more people had it, but I wish we had more eyes on it, and I wish we had more money being brought into it. And it seems like with some of these NPN groups, there's stuff that I get in the mail on a monthly basis. And it's usually centered around one kind of drug, and it almost feels like to me that they're a advertiser for these drugs, and they don't really, their goal isn't really to help people with NPN or educate people. It's to push this drug. And I feel like companies could do a little better job. And sometimes I'm getting two and three of these same things every single month. And it seems like the money that they're using to print these papers out, to send it in the mail, could be used for research instead of trying to sell me on something that I'm not going to take anyway.
Yeah, that's a whole nother side of the business that you could do an entire podcast on, and eventually we will, because fortunately, the difference between what, you know, your options were in 1989 and 2022 are vastly different. I thought they would have been much further ahead, but it's taken a long time to get the companies to work on it, but now there are a lot of companies working on solutions, and CTI Biopharma, which is one of the pharmaceutical companies that provided grants to us for this program, has developed a new drug. And it's one of the things that's really good about it. It's for, I believe it targets more myelofibrosis patients, but I am not 100% sure on that. But it can really help with patients that have anemia. That it's one of the few drugs that can deal with that, because almost all the drugs that are out there today, often if you already have anemia, will drive your counts down somewhat. So it's good to see that. But, you know, I wish there, you know, we're moving faster on the CRISPR and the gene editing and all that stuff. And, you know, I think
that's really exciting stuff. It is.
Yeah, it is. The big question is how, you know, they're moving a lot slower on it than I would have hoped. I would have thought by now we would have heard about a few patients going through that process, because I'd much rather go through that than go through a stem cell transplant.
Sure. Well, if you ever hear of anything, make sure you throw my name in there. I'll be first in line for it.
Well, there you go. There are going to be some major announcements over the next year or two
on
some things, I think, that could have some impact on the long-term MPNs, but we'll have to see, you know, because there's always promising data and then, you know, it doesn't pan out. So
sure.
So what do you do differently today besides diet to make, you know, do you see a therapist at all to talk about? What's your release valve for?
A lot of my release is just trying to educate myself, and hopefully we see and hear more podcasts like this. Reaching out to people in Facebook groups helps. Hopefully there's a Reddit group coming as well, where I think people tend to feel better if they know that there are others out there dealing with the same thing. Kind of makes you feel like you're not fighting that battle alone. So that's really what I do.
Yeah. Well, you know, someone who's walking the same path, if you will, as you, has a different perspective than someone who may be a great friend, but, you know, they don't have the disease, so they don't know what it's like being told that you might die. See, my doctor that I went to, my local hematologist, I'm going to mention his name, Dr. Henderson, who I can't stand. he basically told me I had 10 years to live when I was 30, and I had to get my life in order. And that was a very different experience, because I'm being told that I'm not going to see my kids graduate from high school. And so I actually call his office every year and leave a message with the receptionist and tell him I'm still alive.
Bravo. Bravo.
I hope you're doing as well as I am.
That was one of the first things that I read when I started to do that Googling, was it said, you know, people had 8 to 10 years after diagnosis. And I thought, I'm, you know, barely 30 years old here, you know, and then you get to read on and see that there's things you can do, you know, medications you can take. And I don't necessarily think 10 years is the case anymore with people. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, everything is dependent on how you eventually, because at some point you'll probably need to get on a drug.
And, sure.
You know, everything's dependent on how I had an aggressive form of polycythemia vera. So, I had to get on medication because I got clotting and, I had some initial issues, until I got on the medicines, which was Hydrea. And, you know, it's one of those things with, depends on how you react to whatever drug they put you on. There are just so many factors, and it is important that you remember that these are averages based on data. When someone says maybe it's 10 years, but you know, it's every individual is unique. So you you know, your polycythemia, you could do really well on drug A, and patient B does horrible on the drug that you're on. So, and they have to go to a different drug. So it's, it's really weird that way. And that's one of the things that, like, early on with interferon, the reason you hear such horror stories is they were giving giant mega doses of the drug and it was too much for people to handle. But a lot of the doctors are just not up on the drug. So they just say, well, there's side effects, and you know, there's side effects on just about every drug in the world. So
There's side effects on aspirin.
Yep. So, you know, the main thing is, you know, don't, I believe, and that's why I started MPN Life on Facebook, is that one of the most important things you have to remember to do is get back to living your life.
Sure.
And to set yourself up to create an environment where you're happy and you're returning as much as you can to some sense of a normal life. And there are patients that just never do that, and they go much more quickly. We're also understanding that exercise has a huge impact.
Absolutely.
It may not slow the disease down, but it gives your body the ability to handle it better. And if you stay in shape, you're giving yourself the opportunity better equipped to deal with the disease overall. Especially, you know, I always said, I wrote a whole business plan about the disease and how I was going to handle it and what I was going to do, because I wanted to have this, you know, thing to I needed a plan. That's what got me that and a lot of therapy, because after a while I realized that people were trying, you know, were tired of, they would never say they're tired of hearing me complain about the disease or how I felt that day. Or you used to love going out to the baseball game for nine innings, and now you only want to go for two or three.
Right.
And so, but that was before I got in shape and did a few things. But still, you know, it's mentally, you know, it's still a hard diagnosis no matter what, because, you know, it's like up until the point I was told that I had polycythemia, you know, I could only experience really what it might be like based on some ABC TV movie.
Sure.
The person gets cancer and the wife and the kids have to go on without him. And then when it happens to you, you're like, holy shit.
No doubt. And I think back to what you were saying about the exercise. That really helps with depression too. And I think, you know, it's as important to keep your brain going as strong as you can as you should your body, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. That's an excellent point, because, you know, the more you mix in weightlifting with cardiovascular activity, you really rebuild the systems, and it's probably the best, I agree, the best way to fight off depression, and to be able to, you know, because it's a dual problem. You've got the physicality of the body kind of being attacked by the cancer, and then you've got the mental aspect and the fatigue that some people get. And I was very fortunate that for me, exercise was able to end my fatigue. And in a lot of patients it doesn't, but it's a critical part of my life. So it's like you get up in the morning, and then I go downstairs to the gym in our house and I do my workout, and then so let me ask you a question. So has COVID impacted your life in any way?
I got COVID before they knew COVID was COVID. When they started to talk about the issues with breathing, not being able to taste and smell, probably I would say in January that year, it was really March that COVID kind of took off in 2021. I'm pretty sure that I had it, because it certainly didn't feel like the flu. It didn't feel like pneumonia. I dealt with it pretty good, about 3 or 4 days. Then I had about a week where I couldn't taste and smell anything. And then, as soon as the vaccines were available, I got jabbed. You know, and I know that there's a lot of argument and disagreement about the vaccine, but I've got both of them and the booster, and I feel great. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't want to take any chances. Not that there's any correlation between COVID and polycythemia, but I wasn't going to give my body the opportunity to, you know, kick me down a notch, so to speak.
Well, yeah, and you have a lot of issues, you know, with you know, the immune system. So for me, I've had three, you know, the two shots and then the booster, and I got very little positive response from the vaccine. So I can't fly on planes right now. I can't.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So my doctors said, no, stay out of public. You can go to a restaurant, wear a mask as often as you can when you're there.
Right.
But just be very careful and don't go on, you know, airplanes. And so I, you know, my industry, it's the first time I've missed a trade show. So, it's just, you know, but at the end, it, you know, to me, it's a small price to pay because
it's just
too risky. So,
well, you would think that it was a small price to pay for a lot of people to put a mask on, but you know, you would have thought we were asking them to carry a tank across the front lines at times, you know.
So. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, you know, it's so funny because people, you know, there's always somebody who complains, but you know, generally most people, when the doctor would say, "Hey, you need to get this vaccine for chickenpox. You need to get a vaccine for shingles."
Right.
There's no outrage for people screaming, "I don't want to get a shingles vaccine." Blah blah, yeah. blah blah. And then you hear the stories from people that don't get the shingles vaccine, and you know the horrible pain they went through. I don't get it, and I don't get the look. I don't like wearing a mask. There's no doubt.
Sure. About
it. But at the same time, I'm protecting people around me and I'm protecting myself. So what's the big freaking deal? You know,
right.
We all wear a mask on Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think so much of that with this whole vaccine nonsense is, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of internet when the chickenpox vaccine came out, and, you know, or smallpox. So you have all these empty headed voices out there giving people opinions when they don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah, well, that's one of the bad things about the internet is that it's given a voice to people that probably shouldn't have a voice.
Shouldn't have one, for yeah. sure, for
and,
sure.
And then it seeps into the psyche of the people who are into conspiracy theories. And then before you know it, everyone's, you know, in that group is spreading. It's kind of like a virus.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. When that gets bad. Too bad we don't have a vaccine for that.
Yeah. You know, the thing that surprised, that would be funny. You can't, there's no vaccine for stupid. You know, the thing that's I've been kind of put off by in the business world is that there's, the response to people, like when I tell them, "Oh, I have an immune system problem because of my cancer," there's no empathy. They're like, "Well, you know what? That's your problem."
Right. Right. And maybe if it was their son or daughter, or if maybe it was more well known, people would have a little bit more sympathy.
Yeah. I think maybe they would, but I think you either have empathy for somebody or right. you don't have the empathy. And it's puzzling to me. So another question I have for you is, have you thought about going to a major research facility, like the Mayo Clinic, or, you know, seeking second opinions?
I haven't. I probably should, but given time constraints, money, you know, day-to-day life, it would be extremely hard to get away from something like that. And unfortunately, you know, like we talked about, there's not a whole lot of funding going into PV or MPNs as it is, or maybe there is, and you know, this is something that I'm not aware of. But no, I haven't tackled that yet.
Yeah, there actually, just since you brought it up, there actually is a lot. This is really the last few years. There's been a lot of money going in that wasn't, like, the MPN Research Foundation has donated a lot of money. Even the Leukemia Society has made grants and donations. And you've got MD Anderson in Texas with Dr. Ruben Mesa, who is doing a ton. They're doing a ton of research. See, that's one of the things that I think is important for you at some point to think about figuring out how you would do this. But it's like, because it changed my life. Like, I went to Stanford. Mm-hmm. When I lived in California, and so I still have a hematologist there, but, you really hearing the opinions from other doctors and having your case reviewed, even if you're only going to see them once a year,
right?
Once every few years, just to see what they're doing. Cause the big research centers like the Cornell Weill, the, Mayo's and the MD Andersons, they're really on the cutting edge, and they have information on drugs that the average hematologist may or may not be aware of. And so it also, you know, gives you greater knowledge and insight. So that's why I asked the question. Not everybody can afford it. Some of their insurances won't cover it, but it may be something.
Any excuse for me to go back to California, I'll take it.
Well, you have a lot of options, actually, because you're not far from I don't know how long a flight it is to Minnesota, but you could go to the Mayo up there,
right?
See one of their top hematologists, because they're doing a lot of research as well. So okay. There's a good, I think there's a good place in Chicago. Websites, social media platforms like MPN Forum, have a list of doctors and hematologists all around the country. So it just may be something you want to put in the back of your mind to think.
Sure. Absolutely.
Because that's what really opened my mind to interferon, was going to see a doctor who's regularly writing prescriptions for Stanford wasn't. And so it's helpful, and it just gives you a broader sense of knowledge overall. And I think, the more knowledge a patient can have, the better off you are in the decision-making process.
Yeah, and I think people that do have it and speak to others that suffer from it, like, I've learned so much more just talking to you in this last little bit that I can now continue and give on to other people. And I think we need more of that for sure.
Well, that's why we're doing the podcast. And, the thing that, being around for 33 years with this, I've lost a lot of friends in the MPN community. And I wish I had, we're only going to use the audio portion. We're not using the video, but I wish I could hear their voices. And, I talked to a lot of the families, and they said, yeah, we should have recorded some of his stuff. And so hopefully, as we get more and more people on, we'll have a real archive and people can listen to other patients talk about it. Cause that's, to me, is the most important part is that.
I agree.
Other patients. So last couple questions. Mm-hmm. What do you do for fun?
Normally it would be baseball games, and I guess we're going to get that back now this year. Big baseball fan. I love to fish, love to hunt. And I'm a big pro wrestling fan, even at 39 years old. So, me and my buddy are thinking about going out to WrestleMania down in Dallas this year. So we're really excited about that. Really excited.
Surprisingly, I saw, what was his name? Roddy Piper. Uh-huh. Wrestle Hulk Hogan in Phoenix.
Oh, wow.
And it was hilarious, entertaining as all hell.
Right.
It was like live theater. And
sure.
And it was a blast. And when I was a kid, my brothers and I would get up early in the morning, turn on the TV in the living room, and we would watch, like Chief J Strongbow and Sam, I can't remember his last name, Martino, I think it was. Anyway, we'd watch these wrestlers and then we would go wrestle.
Oh, yeah. I was the kid wrestling pillows and had the wrestling buddies and trying to get my big brother to do moves on me, so.
That's great. So what's your favorite band or what music do you listen to?
Oh, geez, I'm going to have to go old school here. I'm not a huge fan of what's out today, and that's just going to make me sound really old. AC/DC, Metallica, Megadeth, and I can even throw in a Garth Brooks in there. I'm a big Garth Brooks fan, too. So really anything from the late 80s, 90s, anything beyond that, it's kind of beyond me. You know, I hate to sound like a man with a walker here, but I just don't get it.
I remember when I walked into a record store and California, and I asked, you know, do you have the what section? Where I was looking everywhere for a Doors album I wanted to buy, and because mine had been played so many times that it was scratch, and they said, "Oh, that's in the classic rock section."
I was
only 40 years old at the time.
Right.
I'm like, now the Doors are in classic rock. They don't have their own section.
Yeah, I was around a friend of mine who's got a son. He's about 15 years old now, and he's referring to the 1990s as the 1900s. And I don't know when that happened or how I ended up in the 1900s, but I guess that's a thing now.
So. Yeah, that's great. That's great. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for being our first guest. And
I appreciate it. I really do.
Test out this format.
Yeah.
And get it right over time. And appreciate you coming on. And who knows, maybe we'll have you on a couple years from now and see how you've progressed.
Absolutely. Well, and I appreciate it. I'm sure I speak for everybody that deals with this. We appreciate more eyes and more ears on it. So thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
You too.